Support for Science Friday comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering advanced genomic testing that may reveal other treatment options for cancer patients. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Recognize that sound?
I do.
If you grew up in the 80s, that clacking sound should be familiar and might even start to make you feel a little frustrated. It's the twists and turns of a Rubik's Cube. The Cube is celebrating its 40th birthday this year. It has inspired counterfeiters, puzzle makers, engineers, designers, and artists. There's even a Rubik's Cube cartoon crime solver. Do you remember that one? My next guests are here to tell us about this little cube and even let you in on a secret to solving it. Paul Hoffman is the CEO of the Liberty Science Center and creative director of the Beyond Rubik's Cube exhibit at the center in Jersey City, New Jersey. Good to talk to you, Paul.
Thanks, Ira. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, and Anthony Brooks is the speed cuber in residence at that exhibit, and he can solve Rubik's Cube in around 9 seconds. He holds the North American record for solving the cube. He can even do it blindfolded. And he joins us here in CUNY Studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Is it harder to do it, much harder blindfolded to do it than...
We use a different method to solve it that way. So instead of using the traditional method that we use to solve it, we'll memorize the pieces ahead of time and solve it one piece at a time.
Well, we're going to get to solving it, but first let's talk a little history, Paul. The cube was invented in 1974 in communist Hungary, correct? How did it find its way here?
Yeah, absolutely. So communist Hungary, at that time, it exported almost nothing to the West. And Erno Rubik was in his 20s. He's a Budapest professor. He'd just gotten a PhD in design. And he was teaching his first undergraduate class of kids that wanted to be designers and architects. And he was frustrated by what he perceived as their inability to picture in their mind's eye a three-dimensional object. And he thought about this and thought about this, and he invented Rubik's Cube, not as a toy, not as a puzzle, but as a pedagogical aid to help these kids who wanted to be designers and architects develop their sense of three-dimensional geometry. And then what happened is quite amazing. He made about 40 of them in fourth class, and some of his friends were mathematicians who were lucky enough to be able to get a visa and leave communist Hungary once a year for an international math conference. So three of his friends went, each with a Rubik's Cube, and they came back empty-handed. And he said, "What happened? What happened to the cube?" The first guy said, "I left it in my hotel room." The second one said, "Customs took it." And the third guy was honest and said that they each got $1,500.
Wow.
Now, this was 74. Wow. That was a third the salary of a full professor of mathematics in Budapest. So the proverbial light bulb went off in Erno's mind. And then it was a long multi-year struggle with the communist Hungarian government to let him approach toy companies outside Hungary. And he went to toy companies, and I've read all their rejection letters. 2 dozen turned him down. They said, "This is not a toy. It's too difficult. No one will want to do it."
Right.
They all mentioned design object. They said, "It's a design object." So he went to design object companies. So what are those? They make good-looking stuff that's in our gift store at Liberty Science Center or in any museum gift store. And they all looked at it and they said, "This is not a design object. A design object is something that looks pretty on a shelf, but if you touch it, it's out of our league." So 40 companies turned this down, and then finally a man who bought the rights to things and relicensed them bought it, and the rest is history.
Wow.
Because 80 to 81, it sold 165
wow.
million in the West.
Wow. Anthony Brooks, how did you first discover you could do that? You could be such a whiz at the Rubik's Cube.
Growing up, I put the cube down in frustration like everyone else. And a friend taught me in high school. I kept practicing. Initially, I wasn't very fast. And now, 6 years later, my fastest time in competition is 6.9 seconds.
All right, we want to see you.
Sure,
sure. For our audience. Now you took the cube and you mixed it up, right?
Yeah, this is completely scrambled. So now I'm inspecting to plan the first few moves, and I'll begin.
You can come out and see him in person at Liberty Science Center in our exhibition.
Yeah, I'm actually the speed cuber in residence.
Wow. Yep,
that was probably around 8 or 9 seconds.
Eight or nine seconds. And you can do that one-handed, I understand.
Yes, I can.
Can you show this? Mix it up and show us one-handed?
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm tossing this around and scrambling it up. Now I'll look and plan the first few moves, and here I go. I'm about halfway done now.
One-handed. Look at those cubes flying around.
And at this point, I've seen the rest of the solution, and it's done.
Wow. And you can do that blindfolded too. When you say, you will say, I have to look at it and plan it. Do you actually know in your mind what you're going to be doing? Or you have to keep looking at it to see where
it
is?
Yeah, well, you mentioned blindfold solving. And in that case, I plan out, you know, the entire solution before I start. With a normal solve, I just begin by planning the first 10 to 15 moves.
And can you teach this to somebody?
Absolutely.
Can.
Yeah. And I'm actually working on developing an interactive Rubik's Cube app tutorial that will teach anyone in the world how to solve the Rubik's Cube.
Right. We have a cube solving bar in the exhibition at Liberty Science Center where it basically takes photographs of your cube and walks you through solving it.
Yeah. And there's even a robot that solves the cube in the exhibition.
But can you do other things, you know, like mathematics tricks or chess games or does that not help? It's not the same talent.
Some of the skills transfer over into other things. I was actually a competitive chess player when I was younger. But a lot of people think when it comes to jigsaw puzzles and that sort of thing that I may be exceptional. And this transfers over for some things, but I'm not amazing at any sort of puzzle.
Are there different techniques? Like in chess, there are different opening moves by the names, right? Are there different opening moves?
Actually, there are different methods. So very similar to chess and the different openings and techniques and strategies you employ. We have different techniques for solving the Rubik's Cube as well.
And what are they called? They have names to them?
Yeah, I use the Friedrich method. Two other popular ones are Petrus and Roux.
Wow. I think, Ira, what's also interesting is no one knows the optimal way to solve it. I think this is quite fascinating. There are 43 times 10 to the 19th. Okay, that's the number 43 with 18 zeros after it. Unfathomably large. That's the number of possible Rubik's Cube positions. And a little over 2 years ago, mathematicians with back-end supercomputing support from Google proved that any one of these 43 quintillion positions can be unscrambled in at most 20 moves.
Yes.
Okay?
Wow.
So the big mathematical god in the sky would be able to do it in at most 20 moves. But in fact, speed cubers use algorithms and robots use algorithms that are between 50 and 70 moves, because right now it's beyond human ingenuity and it's beyond computational power to figure out what that optimal solution is. So all this in an object that's just a cube. I mean, Plato thought about cubes. They're platonic solids. And yet, Rubik gave it this incredible complexity.
Hey, Anthony, do you, like in chess, do you have to memorize opening moves when you look at the cube and say...
Yeah, so rather than memorizing those opening moves, we memorize algorithms. And I've practiced so much that I sort of solved the first two layers of the cube organically with a lot of intuitiveness. The last layer is when the real complexity with algorithms come into play. And when I get to the last layer, I solve that layer in 1 to 2 algorithms.
Because you said, you said, I'm halfway through.
Yeah.
You knew that you just got to that point.
Yeah.
Are there natural born, you know, good Rubik's Cube champions out there?
I mean, I think I'm confident that I could teach anyone in the world how to solve the Rubik's Cube in under a minute. You definitely have to have dexterous fingers and some sort of inclination towards it to get down to the world-class times, though.
Did you ever get to meet Enrile Rubik?
I did. I met him at the Liberty Science Center last October for the first time, and then he was also at the grand opening of this Beyond Rubik's Cube exhibition this past Saturday, and he's truly an amazing man, and it was a phenomenal experience being able to talk to him and solve Rubik's Cube for the creator.
So, Paul, at your exhibit, is Anthony there just... all day doing the cube?
Yeah, on and off, and Erno Rubik drops on and off. And, you know, it's really about much more than the cube, because so many things were inspired by Rubik's Cube. I mean, it led to a lot of advances in robotics. Early on, people wanted robots that could solve the cube, but at that point, AI researchers hadn't solved the issue of computer vision. You've got to be able to see the cube to solve it. And then the last thing robots got good at was the fine motor skills that are necessary. So we have robots in the exhibition. You can see the first ones. You can see one that Claude Shannon, the father of information theory, was working on. And then we have this incredible robot that normally paints cars on an assembly line, but it gets to get off the assembly line and solve any Rubik's Cube that you hand to it. I like that Rubik's Cube now is a social activity. It started as a solitary thing, you know, you or I trying to solve it. But in this exhibition, we allow people to make symphonies with the cube. Each twist of the cube brings on a different musical instrument. One way brings on a clarinet. Another way brings on a violin. You can add special effects. You can take Rubik's Cubes and make gigantic mosaic portraits. People do this all over the world. I saw in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a portrait of Martin Luther King made from thousands of Rubik's Cubes.
It's almost like Legos, what they do with Legos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a subculture of them. So in our place right now, people are building a gigantic portrait of the Statue of Liberty because it's right outside our window at Liberty Science Center. But it's really to bring out people's artistic creativity, their engineering, and, of course, their mathematical creativity.
Now, Anthony, you're also the North American champion for the pyramid, Rubik.
Yes, I have held the North American record for solving the pyramids. I don't currently hold that that record because constantly these records are being improved at these competitions we compete in.
Are you upset that there are robots? I know there's a Legos robot that can do it like 3.5 seconds or something.
Yeah,
like
and
that?
I really think it's really amazing, and it really speaks to how far the Rubik's Cube has traveled and that people are able to apply the technology we have today to create these amazing things that can do that sort of thing. So I just think it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting to me, Ira, is that it didn't require some scientific or technological breakthrough to make. What Erno Rubik came up with in 1974 was this ingenious mechanism inside the cube that allows it to move without falling apart. I mean, I remember when I got my first one in 81. After 10 minutes, I wanted to know what was inside, and I actually broke it to find out. So we've building a 3,000-pound Rubik's Cube in the exhibit that you can see inside, that you can see this mechanism. But it could have been invented 50 years earlier. It could have been invented in the 1920s. So I love that one person, even in our highly technical age, can come up with something ingenious which has touched over a billion people.
Yeah, and speaking of that mechanism, one of my favorite parts of the exhibition is that we have the original prototypes that Erno used to create the cube 40 years ago in the exhibition.
All right, we have to leave it there because we've run out of time. Paul Hoffman, CEO of the Liberty Science Center, creative director of the Beyond Rubik's Cube exhibit. It's there at the Liberty Science Center in Jersey City. Anthony Brooks, speed cuber in residence at the Liberty Science Center. Go there and see it. We'll be right back.